Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Since George Floyd died under the knee of a police officer on May 25th, more than two dozen Confederate monuments have been taken down or relocated. The Southern Poverty Law Center tracks Confederate monuments and their removal. As of July 7th, nearly 1,800 Confederate symbols, including statues and school and road names, exist in public spaces. George Floyd's death sparked a renewed examination of who society places on a pedestal, who is memorialized in stone and bronze. And this scrutiny extends beyond Confederate monuments. Statues of Christopher Columbus, Francis Scott Key, and Theodore Roosevelt have been removed or toppled. The Washington football team announced it will retire its name and logo, viewed as a slur against Native Americans. Universities are renaming buildings. As America changes and grows, what symbols from its past must be reconsidered or left behind? Larry Gibson is the Morton and Sophia Mocht Professor of Law at the University of Maryland Francis King Carey School of Law. He served as chairman of the Commission to Study the Legacy of Slavery in Maryland, and he currently sits on the Baltimore City Commission for Historical and Architectural Preservation. Gibson wrote the biography Young Thurgood, The Making of a Supreme Court Justice. Larry Gibson, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
Baltimore took up this debate over Confederate monuments in 2015 after the mass shooting of nine black churchgoers in Charleston, South Carolina by a white supremacist. You were part of the Special Commission Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake formed then. What was the task given that commission?
We were asked to examine what to do or make a recommendation about four monuments. We had a monument in Baltimore to the women of the Confederate, to Confederate soldiers and sailors. We had a monument with Stonewall Jackson and Robert E. Lee, supposedly right before the Battle of Chancellorsville. And there was another monument. It wasn't technically a Civil War, but it was a replica of a statue of a Roger Brooke Taney.
Taney, the Supreme Court Justice who wrote the Dred Scott decision.
That's right, right. The committee quickly concluded, as have many people around the country, many historians, that the Dred Scott decision was clearly, even to this day, the most overtly and ridiculously racist opinion ever written by the Supreme Court. He says, well, the people have hinted at, but he says that basically that black people weren't human beings. So we didn't have any trouble arriving at the conclusion that that statue should be removed. And incidentally, he was from Frederick, Maryland, and the government in Frederick, which had a bust of him in front of their courthouse, also had that removed. I mean, that is the Supreme Court decision that much of the country became embarrassed about. So we recommended the removal of that. Besides, the statue in Baltimore was a replica of another one that had been placed in Annapolis. The other three were directly Civil War connected. We quickly concluded that the Jackson and Lee double equestrian statue should be removed. And we suggested that it go to the U.S. Park Service because there is no statue at the battle of which this statue commemorates the Battle of Chancellorsville, and we thought maybe the Park Service might want to put it on the battlefield. Then the other two, we recommended that they be removed. But as to their removal, our commission was considering whether there be some educational activity associated with it.
So in the middle of the night, in August 2017, Mayor Catherine Pugh had all four monuments taken down following a violent white nationalist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. What was your reaction?
Well, of course, the original commission was appointed by the prior mayor, Stephanie Rawlings Blake. She hadn't really done anything with the commission's recommendation. It came kind of near the end of her term. And around the nation, there were waves of removal of Confederate monuments in revulsion to certain events, but particularly two of them. The commission that I was appointed to was appointed in the wake of the murder of those people in South Carolina. Then there was the event in Charlottesville where people waving Confederate flags and Nazi symbols were very overtly racist in their attacks on African Americans and on Jewish people, and then ending with the tragedy of an automobile being driven into a group of demonstrators. And so that's when I think Mayor Pugh had the four statues removed.
Well, had you, after your recommendations to Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake, after they weren't acted on, had you sort of given up? I mean, were you surprised when Mayor Pugh took the statues down?
Well, I complained as Stephanie Rawlings Blake's term came to an end that they hadn't acted on our recommendations. We spent an awful lot of time. We'd conducted hearings, and she kind of let the clock run out. So I was delighted that Mayor Pugh took a firm action.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with University of Maryland Law Professor Larry Gibson about how the nation is grappling with symbols of the past. Why did Baltimore, a city with a significant population of free Black people well before the 14th Amendment, in a state that did not join the Confederacy, why did Baltimore have so many Confederate monuments?
Well, keep in mind that these monuments were erected fairly long after the Civil War. I mean, the war ended in 1865. Most of these monuments were erected many years later. The movement to erect these began around 1905 and 06, so 50 years, and then there would be different waves of activity. And they were really a part of the reestablishing of white supremacy in the South. And they were put up particularly in the center of a government, right in front of the courthouse and in front of the city halls throughout the South, really to send very firm messages to many people, but particularly to African Americans, that the Southern Confederate sympathizers are back in charge. These were political statements. This was a part of what they called back then the Lost Cause movement, that had about four major objectives. One was to sort of generally glorify the Confederacy, to present a false history that the Civil War was not about slavery, and a third, to present a sort of benign image of what slavery was all about. Another theme of the Lost Cause movement was to portray Stonewall Jackson and Robert E. Lee, those particular gentlemen as really gallant, valiant military leaders who may have lost the key battles, but it wasn't because of them. It was because of either betrayals or just the overwhelming might of the North. That was another part of the Lost Cause theme. And there was a very aggressive political campaign. They actually developed a pretty substantial industry, particularly in the 30s, of companies that made an awful lot of money. They would come to a town with a catalog of, you know, you can have a single Confederate soldier, which was the most common, literally hundreds and hundreds of those put up, or you could have a larger monument. They had certain repetitive themes. The themes were restoration of white supremacy, giving a false impression that the Civil War was not about slavery, and some of the others I've mentioned. I think with respect to the cause of the war, that the slavery causes, they just did not anticipate the internet, because anyone now, any listener, can go on the internet, call up the Articles of Secession by which the Southern states seceded from the Union, and you will see that the most common theme is the preservation of slavery. So this notion that the Confederacy was about states' rights is absolutely not true. But that was a part of the false narrative that was to be projected and explained and articulated by these statues and other things.
You have put the erection of these statues in a historic context. What would you say to people who say taking these statues down is an attempt to erase or rewrite history?
There's a difference between keeping something up because we want to remember it, and putting it in its proper place, most often in museums, or the decisions as to what we put in places of honor. This is taking statues and things that about quite unpleasant and despicable things and preserving them, I think are sometimes necessary. I mean, I think that even in Germany, they preserve in histories, in museums, emblems and recognitions of the atrocities that have happened there. That's a different matter. Absolutely. I don't want people to forget the Civil War. I think it's important for people not to forget that these people were traitors, and symbols and images that preserve that history are really important. So I don't think that most people who say removing these from places of honor is an intent to act as if it didn't happen. No, we want very much to remember that this happened, but there's a big distinction between deciding what you keep in some place in some way because you want to remember history and what you place in your few places of honor.
Well, did the Confederate monuments in Baltimore serve an educational purpose?
They were put here during a wave of Confederate Southern sympathetic folks wanting to be a part of the Lost Cause movement, giving this false a narrative. I can go monument by monument, but two of them were the daughters of the Confederate who throughout the South and border states, like Maryland, were able to get these things erected. The Jackson and Lee monument was a man who, these were his personal heroes. He left money in his will. It took about 15 to 20 years before the statutes got there, but these were put there by people who were in favor of and wanted to glorify the Confederacy as political statements long after the war was over.
So political, not educational.
Well, but miseducation, in my impression, certainly there in an effort to miseducate what the Civil War was about, to miseducate about what slavery was like. Some of these provide pretty substantial misinformation about the military developments. If you were to look at all of these statutes and read them, you would think that the Southern generals were all geniuses and that they had won the war. So, miseducation.
Where are the statues today?
I don't know, but in some sort of, I assume, a Baltimore City a facility, but where they are, I simply do not know.
We need to take a short break on the record in our conversation with University of Maryland Law Professor Larry Gibson. When we're back, Columbus, Indigenous people, Italian Americans. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. America is reckoning with its historic heroes, and the debate extends beyond monuments to Confederate soldiers and generals. On the 4th of July, the statue of Christopher Columbus was pulled down near Little Italy and rolled into the Inner Harbor. In response, Governor Hogan tweeted, quote, "While efforts towards peaceful change are welcome, there is no place in Maryland for lawlessness, vandalism, and destruction of public property," close quote. The Promotion Center for Little Italy wrote, quote, "Maybe there are better symbols to stand for our immigrants. However, the point is, for this incident and similar acts of statue vandalism happening across the nation, it was not an angry mob's place to decide what to do about our neighborhood's monument." Close quote. What symbols from the past are worth holding on to? How do we add nuance to our view of historical figures? University of Maryland Law Professor Larry Gibson is with us. protesters are saying, Professor Gibson, we can't wait. The wheels of government turn too slowly. Should they be patient?
Well, first of all, let's be real clear that the issue regarding Confederate monuments is quite different from that regarding other kinds of questions about which heroes and which historical figures should be honored, should be recognized, etc. I mean, what's distinct about the Confederacy is that this was treason in the United States. Hundreds of thousands of Americans were killed by folks from a significant portion of this country who wanted to preserve slavery. So let's not conflate the two matters. These are very different. Societies across the world constantly over periods of time have confronted questions as to what historical events are going to be recognized in their places of honor. And that is usually decided and should be decided by government in an orderly fashion, and certainly not decided by sort of mob activity. What I am resisting is the notion that somehow that these other monuments and other symbols, things which ought to be challenged, bear much connection to the Confederacy.
Well, let me ask you this. A couple of days after the Columbus Monument was pulled down, an op-ed by Yatale Phoenix Bell was published in the Baltimore Sun on behalf of Indigenous Strong, an Indigenous rights advocacy group. Here's part of what she wrote. Quote, "Our requests have been ignored, much like our very existence as Native and Indigenous peoples is often ignored. Seeing this man honored with statues and holidays is deeply offensive to Indigenous peoples, and we can't understand what anyone finds to celebrate about him," close quote. How do you get to consensus on these issues?
Well, that's the nature of a democracy. And I'm so happy that now some of the legitimate grievances of Indigenous people are being recognized. My family, particularly my wife, will tell you how for maybe 25 years I've refused to use the full name of the Washington, D.C. football team, because that was such blatantly racist. I know how I would have felt about a team being called the Blackskins. And so I had great sympathy.
This is On the Record on WIP. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with civil rights activist, author, and law professor Larry Gibson about how we reckon with America's racist past. You mentioned holding lengthy hearings when you were on the Commission on Confederate Statues. Not everyone is going to be happy when the decision is removal. Not everyone's going to be happy when the process takes months. What is the role of consensus?
There are different kinds of places. There are places of honor in a community, special places where we put things and statues and memorials, etc., where there's a generalized community census that, hey, this is something that we want to pull up and elevate. However, are many other places where we should preserve and present things because they're important that we remember. Not necessarily remember because we want to honor any person or event, but we want to remember. That, in my view, can be a much wider. There's not a long a requirement of consensus that people ought to have places where they are able to preserve for posterity that about which they think is historically important. Some may approve of the event, some may disapprove. And I don't think you necessarily have to have consensus. There should be multiple top places in the museums and maybe even something at a low level that a museum, some schools and places where there is a critical mass of people who think that this is something that ought to be remembered and honored. So the consensus, it seems to me, should be sort of required or expected when there's something that is some particular period of time that we kind of all decide that this is something that we as a community, as a city, or as a state wants to put into our place of honor. When we say to ourselves and to the world, this is something of which we approve.
As a law professor, do you find that young people you teach have gaps in their knowledge of America's history that prevent them from grasping why some of the symbols we've talked about are considered offensive?
Yes, but they're better than my generation's was because they have the access to the internet. As I teach in class, something will come up. I mean, this is, you know, I've been teaching a long time. This, let's see, since 1972, I've been a full-time law professor. How many years is this? 47 years. So I've been through a few generations of young people, and a matter would come up, some important historical matter, the Scottsboro incident, Sacco Vanzetti, whatever, some important legal history. In the past, if the students did not know anything about it, I had to spend some time telling them. Now I say, okay, let's stop. Get on your phone right now. Google the Scottsboro case. And they do so. And then they learn. I find that great.
Well, for some white people, maybe older generations, this is the first time they've thought twice about statues and other symbols that are part of their everyday life. I'm wondering if that frustrates you.
You've got a significant number of people who they've been able to structure, their lives are structured such that they have come into minimal contact with African Americans or any contact that's meaningful from their perspective, and it's not really in their world. I understand. So people focus on what's involved and what's critical to their world. I know that's true, but it's not at all surprising. And but even then, I like the new world where I can say to someone, white or black, you may not have known anything about this, but you can instantaneously find something about it.
It's so interesting to talk to you about this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Larry Gibson is the Morton and Sophia Macht Professor of Law at the University of Maryland Francis King Carey School of Law. He sits on the Baltimore City Commission for Historical and Architectural Preservation and is author of the biography Young Thurgood, The Making of a Supreme Court Justice. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Kass. Glad you're listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Kast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.